It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. According to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, federal prosecutors convicted over 200 defendants on public corruption charges in the border counties of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California in 2013 and 2014. This kind of corruption has enabled smugglers known as coyotes to do the dirty work of sneaking drugs and illegal immigrants into the United States. These crime figures are part of the reporting in a week-long series in the Trib called American Coyotes, the result of an 8-month investigation by reporter Carl Prine, who joins us in studio. Carl Prine, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having us.
And also with us is Justin Merriman, a photojournalist who was a part of the telling of this story. Good to have you with us again, Justin.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. You might very well have been reading these stories in this series and having some thoughts or questions about what you're reading about and how this series was put together. You can join the conversation again at 412-246-2002. Carl Prine, we don't face the border issues that these southwestern states do. So my first question would be, why was it important for a Pittsburgh-based journalist like yourself to embark on a labor-intensive investigative series like this one?
Well, it's because we're not at the border. Our readers are naturally curious. They see a lot of things in the media, and they want to know, what's it like on the border? Why is immigration important to me, both documented and undocumented? So they sent us on this journey across the entire border to kind of be the eyes and ears of Pittsburgh.
And what is the story that you wanted to tell? And in order to tell that story, how did you decide on the way in which this would be put together?
Well, it's always difficult coming up with a narrative to describe something as complex as immigration and border security. For us, we let the data drive where we were going. The first 2 months of this story, I built a database using thousands and thousands of federal criminal cases. And from all that data, I was able to extrapolate a lot of really interesting things that no one has ever looked at before, like the fact that 3 out of every 5 coyotes, these are smugglers who bring people in, put them in stash houses, drive people around the country, 3 out of every 5 on the border are American citizens. They were born and raised here.
And we're going to get into the details behind those terms. Justin Merriman, what were the border towns you visited and why were they chosen?
I began in Brownsville, Texas, and basically just moved my way west, stopping at any town that had any interest even if I was just passing through and I saw something that seemed important or a reason to stay. I would stay for a couple of days and explore the town and look into what's happening along the border there in that area. I traveled the entire length, the 1,900 miles of border, stopping in places like I said, Brownsville. We went over towards El Paso and through Arizona down to Nogales and all the way into like Imperial Beach, California, where the fence ends right in the Pacific Ocean.
You know, it's often described that border towns are often described as places where you see the worst of humanity emerge. And, you know, there's a reason why, stories like Touch of Evil take place in a border town. Carl, part 3 of the series, which ran yesterday, begins with a pretty vivid description of one of the places you visited, Edinburgh, Texas. Describe Edinburgh for us and how this place really exemplifies the corruption you are reporting on.
Edinburgh is the dirtiest town in the dirtiest county in the dirtiest state in our country, at least when it comes to borderland issues. And by that, I mean people who smuggle guns, money, people, and drugs. There have been ongoing scandals involving the bribery of dozens of their top officials, including their top lawman, the county sheriff.
Who's in
He's
jail.
Now in federal prison.
Yeah,
and his son, who ran what they called the Panama Unit. It was an anti-drug interdiction unit that was moving drugs around southern Texas. So, again, this was driven by data. no one had ever really taken a look at all this conviction data for bribery, both the people who were giving the bribes and those who were taking it. And that opened up a lot of eyes, because most reporting has been about corruption at Border Patrol and Customs Enforcement, places like that. And we were able to open a lot of eyes and say, listen, it's not really there. It's in the municipal and county and state officials. The people who take the money for these border interdiction grants, they're the ones who are the real dirty characters in all this.
And it's the corrupt officials who enable the coyotes. So what is a coyote? What do they do? How would you describe the typical coyote?
Coyotes are people who traffic folks. They move people in and out of the into our country. And they do it in many different ways. But the key functions that they have are their guides, which they circumnavigate around Border Patrol and other law enforcement by foot. They have drivers who pick people up, and then they take them to stash houses, which other coyotes run. And they move people from stash house to stash house, trying to avoid law enforcement before other drivers and guides bring them on the long journey to hub cities like Houston and San Antonio and Phoenix.
And what is a stash house?
A stash house is a place where you will store human beings, sometimes 80, 100. How many people did you find in that one stash house you were
in? I was in Edinburgh area. I was with the constable's office, the precinct there that actually happens to be extremely legit. And they're one of the few, the exception in the, you know, the corruption story. I followed them, and they raided a stash house that was holding, I believe, about 12 or 13 undocumented migrants. And that's a small stash house. So these stash houses range. They can be homes. They can be hotel rooms that are used as stash houses. We even visited stash houses that were out in the desert in the bush that were simply, you know, a stick hut that they use as stash houses.
And what often happens is that the coyotes, you know, it sounds on the surface, it sounds like, you know, something that, you know, fairly straightforward. We're going to get you into the United States. You pay us money. We deliver you to, you know, wherever the destination is that you want to get to. But it doesn't always work out that way. One of the ways in which it goes bad, as you describe in the series, Carl, is that the coyotes will sometimes hold these people for ransom. They won't do what they've promised to do because they know that they have these people at their mercy.
Yeah, these are extremely vulnerable people. These are people who have already... For most of them now, today, that fewer are coming from Mexico, more are coming from Central America. They've traveled thousands of miles already. They're spending their entire life savings or their family's entire life savings on a one-shot trip into the United States. So they're incredibly vulnerable. Typically, the way these payments work, half is up front and half is when they get to a hub city like Houston. So they end up in the stash house, and then a coyote might say, okay, we want to raise your fee. You've already paid us a couple thousand, but we want a couple thousand more. Or you don't leave. So they take their clothes, they're sitting around in their underwear, they're feeding them one egg a day, and in absolutely deplorable conditions, and family members really are shaken down for this. It's called the payout.
And the coyotes are exploiting the worst fears of these illegal immigrants, because you would think that, if something like this is happening, these people would go to the police, but they can't go to the authorities, right, Justin?
Now, these coyotes have no regard for human life. Often when they're on foot moving through the desert with a group of undocumented migrants and one of them is injured or breaks a leg, these conditions through the desert are just absolutely, life-threatening. You're out walking for 8 days without food and water, except for what you're carrying. If you're injured, they leave you behind and you die in the desert. These stash houses are much the same. There's no beds. There's no furniture. These people are laying on hardwood floors. Often they don't have their clothes. They're fed very little. But what are they going to do? They can't just leave the stash house and go to the police because they're here illegally and they'll be arrested.
So, I think one of the people you talked to, she said she had been raped.
And that's a case with a lot of the women. The women that come up from, you know, Central America are raped the entire length of the journey. And then they get to a stash house and they're extorted. And if they don't have the money, their families are aware that they will pay in other ways.
And many of these people, as you say, are putting themselves in harm's way. They're risking being killed, raped, assaulted in some way. The question is, why are they taking these risks?
You know, think about it. Think about if you were separated from your family, the extents you would go to be with your family. My son, I actually adopted my son from Guatemala, and we've had this conversation where I talked to him about this story, and I tried to explain to him, these may be your relatives that are coming here to be with their families. you know, they're willing to risk their lives to be with their loved ones. And we would all do the same.
How did you gain the trust of the people that you involved in this story? These are activities that they would probably prefer to keep quiet, but they ended up taking you into their confidence and giving you some pretty open access to their activities. How did that happen, Carl?
I report a lot about crime. I'm fascinated by criminals. I'm fascinated what motivates someone to do something. And what I kept finding, at least with the coyotes I talked to, was how vulnerable they were too. Half of the American coyotes we found had been sentenced to drug, alcohol treatment, or mental illness therapy. So this is an inherently vulnerable population as well. That's twice the American average for what we would find in the general population. So for me, it was just opening up. How did you get here? How did you arrive in prison? And they would open up to me. They would say, this is what happened. This is what drove me to commit this crime. Hmm. And I just find that fascinating personally.
Yeah, you're probably familiar with the story of Jake Lingle, who the reporter years ago in Chicago who was fascinated by gangsters and associated with them in much the same way that you did with these individuals that you're reporting on. He ended up getting killed. You, fortunately, are sitting here with us now telling the story along with Justin, but you guys put yourselves in harm's way. I mean, did you, at what point did you maybe stop and consider the danger of what you were doing and weighing that against getting the story?
You know, I think that putting yourself in harm's way is something that comes with the job, and we understand that. And, you know, I've been in conflict zones and in combat, and as has Carl. And you know, it doesn't come into my mind that much, except for I have to do the story and not get injured to a point where I can't do the story. My biggest fears probably on this project were getting bit by a rattlesnake walking through the desert. You know, when we would drive through parts of the desert where you're all alone, there's no street lights, there's nowhere to pull off, and you know you need to pull over for any reason. You have to be aware that you may be pulling over where there's smugglers that are coming through, and boy, a free ride would be, you know, a great ticket in for them, because, you know, they've been walking for 8 days and they got a backpack full of drugs, and you're in danger if you stop in certain places. But you're aware of it, but you continue to do your job. It's what we're there to do.
Did the people that you interviewed and photographed want to establish guidelines for interviews or photographs?
No, I never had anything like that at all.
No, I was amazed by how free and open everybody was.
I even visited in Tucson. I went to a church there that is a part of the sanctuary movement, where they have a woman who is being held there in sanctuary, and she as long as she stays in the church, she won't be deported. And at that church, they also bring in day workers. So these are people who are here illegally, and they go there every day, and they have a lottery to go out and get jobs. People pull into the parking lot and they say, hey, I need a fence painted. And whoever's in line next to go do that job goes. And these are people who were here illegally. And they were very open with me. They told me their stories of how they got into the country. Some who had paid coyotes, others who had walked in, you know, on their own. They told me the stories about their life. So they opened themselves up to me when, you know, potentially revealing their identity could put them in some harm, or maybe face some type of, you know, prosecution from law enforcement agencies.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the week-long series in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review called American Coyotes, the result of an 8-month investigation by reporter Carl Prine, who, along with photojournalist Justin Merriman, has put together this fascinating in-depth series. If you have a comment or question for our guests, you've been listening to some of the things they've been talking about, and you may have questions about how they went about putting this series together, some of the situations they might have encountered. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. You report that in the wake of the September 11th attacks, that Congress doubled the size of the Border Patrol. How has this impacted the situation that you're reporting on here?
Well, the way the United Nations looked at it, it's turned everybody. This is one of the great misconceptions when people say that the border is porous. That's simply not true. There are 9 Border Patrol agents per every mile of border. It is very difficult to get into this country. The place is crawling with Border Patrol. And that has led to really a smuggling industry to counteract it. The United Nations now estimates that 90% of everybody trying to cross our border into the United States has to hire a smuggler to do it, which has created this entire coyote economy.
It's kind of, odd and ironic, I guess, that that a situation, that the tragedy of 9/11 that brought about tighter border controls has created a situation which for many has led to more tragedy.
Sure, because what happens is as you tighten up along the border and you create more security, you're forcing these migrants into more desolate areas, more dangerous pathways to get into the country, and causing more deaths. Since 1998, there's been 6,000 migrant deaths along our borders.
6,000?
6,000.
That we know of.
Exactly.
Right. What is the response to the stringent security along the border, especially in Texas, where security has taken the form of militarization? Governor Rick Perry has, called out the National Guard.
Yeah, but, that was one of the more interesting things I thought when I got to Rio Grande City, that everybody would be complaining about the National Guard. That wasn't true at all. They were complaining about the state police. They've also had a surge of state police troopers, and these guys follow you around all day. It was kind of weird being in Rio Grande City to have, let's say you want to go to the Walmart, and you're followed by 2 or 3 state troopers everywhere you go. This led to a lot of complaints about ethnic profiling. I think it varies.
Civil rights complaints,
yeah, especially if you're a young Hispanic man. Now, you have to remember, the typical coyote is a 34-year-old Hispanic man who lives in that area, born and raised in the United States. That's your typical smuggler. So if you are 34 years of age and younger, that's kind of who they're looking at.
Many of the people trying to sneak across the border, as I mentioned earlier, are putting themselves in harm's way, and there's all sorts of deplorable conditions. Justin, in terms of your approach to telling this story in photographs, what were the things? There's some very interesting images in this series so far that we've seen, and I'm just curious as to, in your approach to telling the story as a photojournalist, what you're looking for, through your eyes, what are the things that you're trying to allow us to see that you think that you're deciding are important for us to see, and then how to create those or photograph those images?
Yeah, that's the big challenge. You go into these things, and what attracts me is the human experience and what people are facing. And I ask myself those questions, and I try to figure out, how do I visually show that? And I went along with law enforcement. I was with Border Patrol, with local constables' offices, and I saw how they handled the situation. And then I would also go out to places where, like the church I mentioned, where there's these undocumented migrants, people here illegally, and I would see how they're living and talk to them. And I visited a cemetery in Holtsville in California where the undocumented migrants who die in the desert are buried, these unmarked graves, John Does and Jane Does, several hundred of them. I went to San Diego to this Freedom Park, and this is a spot in Imperial Beach where people on both sides of the border can actually interact. It's probably, I think, the only place along the border where they're legally allowed to interact, and they come there and they meet with their family members who they may have not seen in a decade or more. Some people were there meeting their grandkids for the first time, and they talk through this chain link fence. And the most they can do is stick their pinkies through and give pinky kisses. I mean, those types of images really show you how difficult this situation is. It's such a complex situation. You have the law enforcement issues, and then you have the humanitarian issues. And I'm not, I don't know what the right solution is for all of this.
Is part of your approach as a reporter, Carl, to humanize this story, to make people think about it in the terms of, a lot of which Justin has just described, how this impacts people and families and relationships?
What I try to do, especially with a large series like this, is give everybody a voice, because there are so many different perspectives along the border. No town is the same. No person's situation is the same. But everybody has a really unique way of looking at things. And my idea, anyway, was to empathize with everyone, to try to understand what motivates people to do things and what motivates their reactions, not necessarily to sympathize. So that way I can stay out of the fray, especially the political fray involving immigration.
What is the impact of coyote smugglers, you know, what impact did they have on residents and communities along the American side of the border?
They can make life miserable. They can.
How so?
Well, we especially heard this from ranchers and people in the national parks. There's an immense amount of environmental damage that's done by hundreds of thousands of feet moving through the same trails all the time. It does change the environment, oftentimes very frail ecosystems to begin with that can suffer immensely when people start moving through it. Also, there, you know, there, but one of the more interesting stories I thought was one in Sausabe, Arizona, wherein a woman, a rancher and a profound environmentalist who had restored her own ranch back to as pristine condition as she could, you know, had to fight off at one point with a shotgun people who were cutting through her screen door to come in and take all of her belongings.
Jeez.
That's what they call it, deadheading. These are coyotes on their way back. Either they've dropped off people or they're drug mules and they're coming on their way back. And it's a targeted opportunity. They just want to come in and steal what they can. And this is a big issue for ranchers because they live oftentimes dozens and dozens of miles away from the nearest help.
So, you know, your response just now prompts me to circle back to a question that I touched upon earlier, which is, you know, gaining the trust of these people. These are, you know, as we're hearing, really unscrupulous people, people who would not only take these inordinate sums of money from people to deliver them to the other side of the border, but would, you know, extort money from them, assault them, rape them. I'm wondering how you establish ground rules with these people that enables you to do the reporting that you did.
Well, for me, it was.
And at one point, are you thinking, what if they turn on me?
Well, I think I had a kind of a different experience. Yes, there are some really bad coyotes, really bad, and certainly the people who were stealing other people's stash house populations by gunpoint to ransom off the inhabitants. Those are pretty nasty people. But I also met a lot of coyotes who just kind of fell into it. They needed a couch to sleep on, or they needed to make their next fix. So they were, you know, you can empathize with these people. You can understand what drove them there. And I found many of them to be very human.
Do they treat people differently than the worst of the coyotes?
Yeah, but and they would often complain.
Is there such a thing as a good coyote?
Yeah, well, they would often complain. They said, you know, beyond the fact an undocumented migrant has an incentive to embellish a story so that they can get paper to stay. Beyond that, you know, sometimes we're thrown in with really bad ones. Someone on the crew might do something really bad, like rape someone, but I wasn't that guy. I heard that story many, many times, and it's true. They were not charged with that crime. Oftentimes, the federal authorities determined that they didn't know anything about it, but they still got stiff sentences because they were with that person.
So, someone listening to this might say, how does this impact us here in Pittsburgh? What is the impact?
Well, Pittsburgh is unique in that we are not a city with a lot of undocumented immigration. And that which we have is skewed in many different ways from what you would see in most other major American cities. However, we have our fair share, and there are people, these are inherently vulnerable populations who are often extorted. They're paying off their debts. They continue to pay their debts off when they come here. Their families oftentimes are held. Their families oftentimes back home in Guatemala and Honduras and other places are essentially held hostage also by the cartels down there. Because if they say anything about the smuggling networks, if they complain about being raped, they will be attacked. So these people have to live these lives of silent regret. They can't tell their immigrant experience.
And fear.
Yeah.
I think even though we may be several thousand miles from the actual border, we have to recognize the fact that this is a human issue. These are people in the U.S. dying on our soil. These coyotes that we want to place the blame on so many other people, but you know the statistics show these coyotes are Americans. This is happening on our soil. So it's easy to want to walk away from the problem or blame something else or say let's put up a wall and just fence in this country, but we have to look at why people want to come here and how we can address these types of situations and issues.
It was, among others, Congressman Steve King, probably one of the most well-known arch conservatives in Congress, who has said that we need to put up the wall. I mean, after the reporting that you've done, does it make any sense that when you hear the talk of of building a wall between Mexico and the United States. Does that make any sense to you, having been down at that border?
You know, we saw the wall change in all different forms along the 1,900 miles, some places 20-plus feet high, wrapped with concertina wire and barbed wire. And it only slows down the traffic. It doesn't stop it. People could jump these fences in a matter of a minute, even 20 feet, 30 feet. I watch it happen right near me at the Imperial Beach, California, right at the beach where the fence goes into the Pacific Ocean. Someone jumped it, and literally they jumped it so fast and were apprehended so fast, I never even saw it happen, and it was a few hundred feet from where I was standing. The wall, and then you have to look at the cost of this wall, $3 million a mile. You know, what I think what, you know, what we should want along the border is probably security in the form of technology, and there's no, you know, boots on the ground. Actual Border Patrol agents on the ground. I would go to places in the desert that were so remote that by foot it would take you an hour to walk there or longer, and Border Patrol would show up just as I was standing there in the middle of a desert.
We have a caller on the line who is a native Texan now living in Bethel Park. Her name is Caitlin. Caitlin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Carl Prine and Justin Merriman.
Hi, I just wanted to say, you know, it's really incredible that the Pittsburgh Tribune, or that Pittsburgh at all, would be kind of the entity to be interested in this story, to fund something like this. And yet it's really not surprising. You know, at home, that agenda is get more money, get more government funding, get more security. And when we have this corruption in the lines, you know, it doesn't work. But what I really appreciate is that you bring the humanity back into it, and that you're taking a look at the lives of people that are being affected by this corruption. And I think that that's so Pittsburgh, and it's what I appreciate about being here now, and you know why I'm here to stay. And I just wanted to thank you for doing this story.
Thanks, Caitlin. Where in Texas are you from?
I am from Dallas originally. I've been in Denton the past 2 years.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So further up north, I'm not actually from the border towns, but I was a teaching assistant at the University of North Texas for the last 2 years. And I remember I had one student in particular who was an immigrant from Mexico, and he was very aware of how criminalization had affected his family, you know, his people. And that really is what kind of changed. It opened my eyes about this, because a lot of us in Texas were not really that tuned into thinking of, you know, these people as human beings.
Caitlin, what brought you to the Pittsburgh area?
My fiance is from here, and I had visited several times. You know, I loved it. So after I graduated, this was definitely the place to come.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your listening to the program and taking the time to call in. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have just about come to time for this segment. One final question for both of you, and that would be, you know, the situation, which has been made worse in the wake of 9/11 and the tightening of security on the border, how long do you see this situation continuing? Will it ever be brought under control of coyotes sneaking immigrants and drugs across the border? Justin.
That's a tough one. You know, I don't know how you can bring it into control. I think the tougher we make the security on the border, the more valuable we make the humans that are being trafficked, and the price goes up and up and up.
So then, what is the solution here, Carl? Do we think we have an answer, or is it more your job just to lay out the problem and let others decide?
I'm just a dumb reporter. I try to stay out of policy stuff because I'm just an idiot.
We're all just dumb reporters.
Well, you're not, but you're a smart reporter, but I'm a dumb one. The one thing I did hear everybody say, whether they were coyotes or ranchers or Border Patrol or cops, everybody said, if you want to stop this problem, then start issuing more temporary work visas to people who want to come here. The jobs are here. Just find a legal path for them to get here, and you will defang the cartels.
And that's why the president and Congress have been talking about immigration reform, and it will be a big topic in 2016 during the run-up to the election, for sure. In the meantime, we want to thank our guests, Tribune Review reporter Carl Prine and Tribune Review photojournalist Justin Merriman, again, the two men behind the week-long series in the Trib called American Coyotes, the result of an 8-month investigation. Read it. It's fascinating, and it's been a fascinating discussion with both of you. Carl, Justin, thank you both for being with us here today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I get to scratch this off my bucket list.
Oh, really?
Thanks so much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. Coming up, Pennsylvania's Wetlands and Streams could be losing Clean Water Act protections. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.